total amount of gearing or leverage that you have. And we had, under the previous regulatory regime, an old-fashioned method, but a fairly strong method that said 10 to 1. If your bank is worth a billion rand, you're not allowed exposure of more than 10 billion. And that seemed to play safe for decades and decades, a limit. What happened in the new regulatory framework, known as Basel II, or the new capital accord, as we've discussed in previous shows, if the listeners go and listen to those shows, under the new capital accord, the banks were given a blank piece of paper and told, you go and work out what you think is a safe limit based on some risk calculations. And again, in theory, that would have worked, except that naked greed took over and they never actually employed the methodologies for real. They cheated left, right and centre to try and make as much money as they could. They massively exposed. And so, Darrell, even those helpful derivatives like financial futures or options, which help us balance risks or put deposits on foods and things that we produce, you can even be reckless with those. The question is whether the banks were allowed to be reckless or not, and not the danger in the instrument itself.
Well, now, we've got another caller up here. Caller, are you with me?
I am.
Hello. And who am I speaking to?
Rasul.
Rasul, do you have a question or a comment my guest?
I have a question, Darrell. I wonder if Mohammed can explain to the listeners. We have Zimbabwe, where the currency lost its value. Now, why is it the dollar hasn't lost its value to the extent that it has happened in Zimbabwe? Because both were printing money without any backing. Is it because like China, who owns a lot of dollars and Europe, that they don't want to get rid of that money because they will get nothing in return?
I'll address that, and then I'll let Mohammed take it. The fact is that the printing in the American dollar has not been anywhere near what they did in Zimbabwe percentage-wise of its GDP. The Americans have printed almost a year's worth of GDP in the last 6 months to prop up the government and the system. So basically, they've just taken every cent and every centime and every dollar in circulation for a year, GDP for a year, and printed that amount. So there should be, in reality, we should see the dollar have dropped by 50% value because they've just doubled it, the amount of dollars in circulation. That is not what happened in Zimbabwe. What happened in Zimbabwe was hundreds of times more virulent than that. But we are well on our way to a hyperinflation scenario. Do you agree with that, Mohammed?
Yes, indeed. Well, part of the problem, it's not the whole problem, but part of the problem is that as Zimbabwe did print a much higher ratio of local currency. That is part of the problem. But we have at the root of this, the concepts underlying foreign exchange itself as a floating or fixed mechanism. And this is something which needs to be addressed. It's a bit complex to address here in this answer, but it's something that needs to be addressed in order to deal with world poverty and to eliminate world poverty overnight.
Well, Abu Bakr, do you have anything else to add to this?
Yes, I think, just before, Tim, you were going to discuss the matter of usury, the ugly face of capitalism, how it's creeping into the, Muslim world, and especially into the so-called Islamic banks and Islamic finance, which is just another, as you said, a guise to, disguise usury, as they call it, so-called profits, because, they operate just the same manner as any other, Western usury-based commercial banks, and they're just deceiving the public, because their profits are so-called benchmark to the interest rates, and You know, so they operate in exactly the same way. They use the same, you know, computer systems, everything the same. They just sort of rubber stamp it with a, you know, term called profits instead of interest. So, you know, that's absolute deceit. And, you know, I think the listeners need to be aware of this and, you know, need to do their homework properly and, you know, see, you know, what's, you know, the actual sort of, you know, thrust from falsehood.
Well, in my view, and I don't know if Muhammad being a Muslim and you Abu Bakr, but real capitalism that the world has never seen. Capitalism, the way the concepts of it have never been adhered to since the introduction of the system. It's never been done. But the fact is, the idea of it is a wonderful one, to bring people willing to risk something for gain. To get a good idea into production so that all can benefit. Now, that's the basic concept behind capitalism. But once money becomes concentrated in a few hands, their capacity and ability to manipulate overrides or undermines any small investor's ability to participate in true capitalism. And as a result, there has never been an opportunity for the rank and file to be truly participatory in any system that's going to benefit more than, you know, benefit the masses. And what we end up with is the enrichment of a few at the cost of the many, and until we get to a point where 1, 2, or 3% of the world's population are controlling 96 or 7% of its wealth, which is where we are today.
No,
you want to address that, Muhammad?
Indeed, Darrell. I mean, you're quite right to point out that capitalism, as per the textbook, has never ever been given an opportunity to demonstrate what it's like, because of the fundamental principle that the enemy of mankind, these Zionist bankers, have been issuing the money and playing games with the money itself. So
yeah.
You can forget the rest of the free market concept, because the free market doesn't exist when the money market itself, the market for cash, has already been cornered, when that's already been monopolized. If the money's monopolized, then you can forget the goods and services side of it, because half the vision isn't real. I would also point out, Darrell, and for the benefit of a lot of our listeners, yes, there is a lot of what we would, the expression is haram windows in halal palaces. There are a lot of people pretending to be offering Islamic products which are not really Islamic. And Darrell, you'll probably be surprised to find out that Islam is in fact very much capitalist in nature. The great leading light of our faith, as you know, is the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family and companions. And he was actually a businessman, Darrell. He was famous as a businessman, and he was famous for his integrity. And he was continually pushing his companions, if they found themselves in a position of holding cash, to go out and do investment business, to take risks, to invest in people, find people who are looking for an opportunity, people who've got a business idea, people who want to do something. He said the hoarding of cash, holding cash for cash's sake, is prohibited. You're not allowed to do that. Find people who want a chance, find people who've got ideas, and back them. And that business model in the Arabic is called Mudaraba. We would call that equity or share finance. And I can't stress how much he told people to do that. And sadly, Darrell, we have now probably the biggest hoarders of wealth in the world, in parts of the Arab and Muslim world. They're some of the worst for it.
And for cash's sake, for power's sake, because what happens as these amounts are being amassed, you are able to leverage influence and leverage power over societies. And these Zionists have virtually cornered the market of power in the world. And what I'm saying to you today, Muhammad, is we are at an inflection point, a real crossroads in human history, where if the people that are listening to this show or that have contact with anybody from that is listening to the show, if they do not move these facts and start making activities, bringing forward these facts to stop this, the suffering that the world is going to know is going to be the worst in recorded history, in my view. And I have been on this radio broadcast for going on now, on and off here, for almost a year. It'll be a year this summer. And I have never been wrong about my predictions. Maybe the timing has been wrong, Muhammad, but the predictions have always been correct. And, in fact, if anything, I have underestimated the damage and the destruction. And people really need to take seriously just how late an hour it is, because, you know, if faith without action is not faith at all, in my view. And many people who are faithful, if they just sit back and watch the events unfold without trying to actively repair or ameliorate these issues, they're not being a person of faith in any way, in my view.
Indeed, the certainly for the teachings of Islam, it's unequivocally clear that action is meant to be out there. One of the my friends recently did a talk in the House of Commons, Darrell, and to a mixed faith audience, but I would say it was probably 70% Christian of different denominations, and he raised something which is extremely important about faith and action. He said, you know, we've got a room full of Christians here, a few hundred Christians sat here from all the different churches, he said, and we all recognize that these bankers are, you know, destroying the world as we know it, yet how many Christians here are following the example of Jesus, peace be upon him and his mother, of actually going out there to turn the tables over of the money lenders in the temple? He took direct action. He would probably be labeled a terrorist today for that. But
yes,
he went out there and said, you guys are wrong. You are corrupting a holy place. You're corrupting the nature of society. What you've brought here is wrong, and we have to stop this with our hands. It's so serious. It's not just a question of praying and asking God to remove it. He's saying, this one is so serious that I'm setting an example to anybody who says they believe in me. You've got to change this with your hands.
And that's right. And it's the only time he went out in his ministry and actually publicly committed what, during its time in his day, was considered a crime. And he actually did it in full view of everyone around him, saying that this action needs to be taken. It needs to be taken now. Now, if anybody of faith, of any religion that believes that ultimately we are going to answer to a power greater than ourselves for these deeds of humanity, then they take no action. I wonder what kind of response they're going to get when they face judgment. If you stood by and watched as these things unfolded and did nothing. You know, there is a saying in America, I guess it's in Europe as well, the only thing that's necessary for evil to reign is for good men to do nothing. And there's no truer statement ever uttered than that one. And we are in a point today where good men or supposed good men are in fact doing nothing. And I can see that by evidence that I get almost no emails from South Africa and very little financial help, none. And that means, you know, I struggle over here trying to keep myself on air and spending every ounce of my energy to try and bring this message to the world. And the South African public has done very little to anything to help me do it. And I find that to be painful when I try to do my very best to inform them. And it hurts me, actually, to know that that's the truth about my broadcast. However, that doesn't mean that my efforts are in vain. Quite the contrary. In fact, there are very few places in this world, if any other places in this world, that brings this kind of truth to the people. And there are people out there speaking the truth. You're one of them, Muhammad. There's a guy I got coming on next week from Argentina who is also another one speaking in Spanish to his audience, telling the truth. But the fact is there are few of us. And the fact that I don't get the support I need to make this message grow is kind of says a lot about the state of our world, does it not?
Well, it does indeed, darling. I mean, one of my own personal disappointments is that I'm not able with my own hands to turn the tables of the moneylenders over, because I can assure you, had it been physically possible, Darrell, I would have done it. The best I can manage is to stand up and let my voice be counted. But I think we need people out there to also stand up and let their voices be counted, not just by ringing in this radio show, but maybe going out there and starting their own websites or their own email lists, or trying to promote this further and further afield. Take it into debate, get it into their local university. If they're in a university, get it debated there, get the shows there, get us to talk over the air there. Whatever it takes, people have to push harder, because these tables need to be thrown over. And the fact is, the mainstream media is helping keep those tables upright. Those people, you know, Darrell, what G20 was about, coming back to what Abu Bakr was raising earlier, G20 is a group of people who want business to go back to business as usual, for the same people in the world to remain under the thumb, for the same people in the world to remain under poverty, for the same people in the world to remain under pressure. They want business as usual. And at the moment, we have an opportunity to overthrow that business as usual.
We do. Abu Bakr, do you have a last question for us?
Yes, yeah. I'd like you to comment on the, you know, the role of this criminal gang again in the manipulation of currencies and even the gold price, you know, because the gold price is normally set, like, for instance, in London, and it's just a handful of, you know, banks like the Rothschilds and Warburgs and the like that, you know, set the AM and PM fixes off the, you know, gold price. So, you know, a month ago we had gold up over 9,000 rands an ounce, and now it's like below 8,000. So, you know, between the currencies and the setting of the gold price, they also control that market. I'd like you know, your comments on that, and I'll sort of listen on air. Thank you very much. And
thank you, Abu Bakr. Well, first I'll pick that up. The fact of the matter is that there is not nary a market that they don't control, whether it be timber exchange or molybdenum or aluminium or gold or oil. It doesn't matter what item you pick. Automobiles, electricity, rubbish pickup. Go across the board. Gold is a commodity that has been related to money for a long time, and because of its relationship to backing of money, it has a historic roots. But the manipulation and control over valued things in the world is almost exclusively in these people's hands. And it, again, in a world that runs on petrochemicals, I think petrochemicals are probably equal, if not more important, than the control they have in that than it is gold. But the fact is, control is in every sector and every area, and it all roots back to the bankers controlling the companies that do all of the trading worldwide. Mohammed, you want to address the question of Abu Bakr?
Well, of course, Darrell. You know, whoever, one of the quotes of Rothschild was, you know, that that if people were to take all of his wealth off him and he had the power to create money, he would get it all the physical assets of the world back off them at the flick of a pen, was his quote, at the flick of a pen. Basically, these games which they play with numbers and interest, etc., they end up in control. You and I, Darrell, we were taking, shall we say, some personal interest in some gold mining stocks on, of all things, the Canadian TSX stock exchange. And we saw activities there which are just so disgraceful in terms of manipulation of share prices and manipulations of holding. And we saw lots of small guys who'd seen great opportunities have their investments just ripped out of them. I mean, it's not just in South Africa that gold is being manipulated. These people are wherever there is a source of any resource worth having. They are somewhere nearby poisoning somebody, trying to steal the rights to something, trying to make sure that the little dark guy doesn't make any money out of it and that they can cash in on all of it. I mean, it really is a disgraceful state of affairs across the board, across the world, in all these assets.
That's right, and I agree with that 100%. We do have another caller on. Is the caller up? And who am I speaking to?
Yeah, anonymous.
Do you have a question for the guest?
Yeah, we've got a guest, Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullahi.
Right, now I just needed to know, is money hoarding, is it haram?
Oh yes, it's very clearly prohibited in the Holy Quran that
right, so
excessive money hoarding is prohibited.
Right, so everybody's hoarding money in Switzerland, what's happening to that money? I'll listen on to the air.
The hoarding of money in Switzerland, like the hoarding of any money, if it's not for a specific purpose, but just for the hoarding of money itself, it is not prohibited, it's not permissible. The reason being, it has the same effect, good question to ask this, it has the same effect as giving money to banks to hold for capital balance purposes. We take cash out of the economy and give it these people so that they can balance their numbers. What that does is it causes there to be less money available for supply, for the purchase of goods and services. So Islam has prohibited hoarding because it understands that when you take money out of supply, somebody somewhere isn't going to sell their loaf of bread or the fruit they're growing, or they're not going to sell their services. So really, we don't want to see any form of hoarding. If you've got money, get out there, invest it, or give it in charity even, by starting something good in the world. There is so much good that we need doing in the world, and for somebody to stand idly by with money, you will, and I do, I'm not joking, you will answer to Almighty God on the Day of Judgment why you didn't use that money for his sake.
Well, Aisha, are you with us, Aisha?
Hello?
Hi, hello. Aisha, how are you?
Fine, and you?
I'm keeping it up. I do my best every day. You have a question for our guest?
Yes, I'd like just to have a point made that, you know, they've worked on one of the basic values of a human being, is that is greed. They've made us get into things that we cannot afford, so we have overextended ourselves, and then now they've pulled the rug off from under our feet so they can get everything for nothing and they can control our lives. I don't know.
You're exactly right, Aisha. They have undermined us and they have tempted us with credit. Not everybody has bought into it, and I you're listening to someone right now who has not. I had the forethought and the strength of character to say some years ago that whatever I was witnessing was not normal, was not good, and that I as a sentient person should not participate in this. There was something inside my soul, inside my spirit, that said this was wrong-headed. And I divorced myself from it, and I have not ever regretted that decision for one second. Now, again, I don't have anything of wealth to speak of in my life, but the wealth and peace of mind alone of not being part of that system is so valuable that I can't put a value upon it. These kinds of things we're all capable of making these kinds of decisions in our lives, and you know, it's always easiest to take the what seems to be free. But again, you know, nothing in this life is free, and when you take something that seems free, you will pay a price later, as many people are seeing today. Muhammad, do you have anything to add to that?
Indeed, Dal, we have a terrible situation where many people have been tempted. The facts are that if people stand back, if they're honest with themselves, and they say, yes, I was tempted, I panicked, I saw everybody else doing something, I felt I had to join in, I didn't have the strength of character to my intellect, because one of the things that we saw happening, say, Daryl, in the vehicle markets, in the car markets, in the housing market, was that the price of objects, of assets, and the value of assets became divorced. the actual, what something was really worth and what the price of it were not in the slightest bit related. And when people see that and ignore that, they're doing an injustice to themselves, never mind the rest of society. To actually say, well, this house here, I'm paying R1 million for it, but, you know, 2 years ago it was only worth 300,000. What on earth has happened at that house to make its price go there? Nothing except the availability of credit, Darrell.
And greed going along with it.
Yep, and going along with it, because if people say, hell no, this is wrong, it's morally wrong, there's no reason why this house should have trebled in value in 2 years, this is wrong, and that's why I'm not going to join in. And of course, the worst place in the world for this to have occurred at all, sadly, Darrell, we have the gold medal for this in the Olympics, was in Dubai. Dubai has seen property going up like nobody's business. The prices have been insane for what are basically flats in the middle of a desert. And of course, now it's exploded, and it's both exploded and imploded. Not many